I'm Eric Warriston.
This is Noam Shore.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Noam, how are we doing?
I have a case of the sads, Eric.
The sads?
A very major case of the sads, yes.
This is a sad weekend in Major League Soccer for Revolution fans.
It's a sad weekend. I feel like it's been a sad, like, 6 weeks, if not longer. You know, the last podcast we did, we experimented with a car cast, riding with podcasters. We were so excited about a big win at Gillette Stadium in front of a big crowd. And since then, they've fallen like a stone, and it just keeps on falling.
Yeah, they fell all the way to the fifth seed in the East from what at one point looked like a team that was going to challenge for the Eastern Conference title, maybe even the Supporters Shield. And this weekend had to go on the road to Philadelphia and just got destroyed.
And it was a similar story that they kind of get your hopes up at the beginning of a game. They came out strong the first 10 to 20 minutes, and then they make a mistake and they fall apart. And this game they lost Carlos Heel to an injury.
Right. The game actually started out okay. They came out, they hit the crossbar. They were, you know, attacking the Philadelphia goal pretty regularly, looked confident in possession in a way that they haven't really for a few weeks. And then one mistake, kind of a little bit of a cheap penalty call on Jacob Jackson. You know, he was certainly out of position, though, and you could see why the ref blew the whistle. Did you think that should have been a penalty?
Yeah, I didn't think that should be a penalty. I mean, if I'm going out full speed ahead, I'm first to the ball, and then somebody else runs right in front of me, how am I supposed to stop? In fact, I would argue that it was a foul on the Philadelphia player for obstructing the path of the goalkeeper.
You could definitely make that argument. I mean, they try to protect the goalkeepers as much as possible on loose balls like that. And I wonder how much of this is a case of essentially a rookie goalkeeper. Jackson was injured his whole rookie year. I think this was his third game ever for the Revs, and obviously first playoff game. And you just wonder if a more experienced goalkeeper gets the benefit of the doubt there.
Right, and I think this brings up another, like the layers of the Revs' downfall is multiple in its nature. And defense not playing well, and goalies making mistakes. And why is a rookie goalkeeper being inserted at the end of the season into a starting role when you have at least a solid experienced goalkeeper, even as a backup, who is playing pretty well on the bench? That's two games in a row where a goalkeeper mistake led to a costly goal. And I think there's other lineup issues potentially as well. You have an insistence on one striker, which has not been creating a lot of chances for the Revs. You have Bo then often moving out wide when things do change up a little bit, trying to cross the ball in, when I don't know that that's really his best strengths. And then you had a whole bunch of lineup changes as well in terms of formations, trying to play with a defensive player moving into the center of the field on attack and moving back on defense, which is an aspiring style of play, which I don't know that we have time to get into the technical aspects of that, but Pep Guardiola over at Man City, you know, tries to get that type of game going. It's a little bit beyond the Revs, I think. And so we're still fussing with formations on the field going into the playoffs. I don't think that helps either.
Yeah, you certainly understand a new coach coming in and wanting to put his stamp on the team, but there hasn't been much consistency in the lineups or much philosophy that's been easy to follow. I mean, usually at this point in the season, lineup changes are, you know, injuries, maybe someone's out of form, maybe there's a tactical or strategic reason to make a change against a particular opponent. None of that seems to be the case. I mean, these lineup changes really feel like tinkering with a team that was pretty good for most of the season and should have been getting better with some of the additions they've made. there have been some subtractions via the transfer window, but you know, they brought in Thomas Chankalay, who actually led the team in goals per 90, even though he only played 11 games. He got 6 goals in those 11 games, and was basically as productive as Bobby Wood was in almost half as many minutes, and about a third the number of games. And not to pick on Wood, but you know, you certainly can pick on Giacomo Veroni as well, who, you know, 6 goals in 29 games is not good enough. Although, you know, in his case, he only started 13 times.
Right. So, Eric, how do you make sense of this Revs season so far? You have a clear trend before and after that unfortunate tournament. I can't even remember the name of it now. That broke up the season.
Right. Yeah, that's a great question.
Before that tournament, the Revs were, like you said, fighting for the supporter shield, at least a solid second place, and with potentially great positioning against the Western Conference if they were to make it through, which sadly, even to the last day of the season, if the Revs were to get through the playoffs, have a very good chance at home field if they were somehow to make it through to the MLS Cup, although it doesn't look like that's going to happen. But after that tournament, they have not been playoff capable. What do you think is causing that?
That's a great question. I think obviously the change at the top with Bruce Arena being let go, and then a good 6 weeks of indecision before they named a real, you know, I hate even to use the phrase semi-permanent, a second interim coach, really, because they had Richie Williams for a couple games, and then right. Ultimately Clint PA. So I think that just creates a lot of uncertainty, and you know, you just wonder how empowered a new coach is in a situation where they're basically being given just an interim title. I think the loss of Jordy Petrovic, which roughly coincided with that break that you mentioned earlier in the season, had a lot to do with it. You know, we talked a lot about how he kept them in games and won them games by making great saves. And maybe the Revs are just a bad defensive team. And maybe that's why their last two goalkeepers have really been able to shine. You know, Matt Turner, Jordy Petrovic. They would make spectacular saves. They would stand on their head, keep the Revs in games. But why did they have to do that? Well, because other teams could play, you know, pretty much right down the middle and beat the Revs defense at least a couple times a game.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, because you look at the team now, and part of what has me with a deep case of the Sads with the Revolution is they don't even seem ready to come together again next year. Like, what is the team and the lineup next year that could be materially better than they are today? Even if they brought in a new manager, could that manager really turn things around? And so, to your point, did Petrovic really save the Revolution the first half of the season? And now you see multiple layers of challenges that were not as visible before, perhaps.
Yeah, well, I want to go back to the Philly game, because as badly as they played, and they lost 3-1, were never really in the game, you know, down 3-0 at halftime. I don't think Philly played that well either. I mean, the Revs hit the crossbar twice.
Right. They shot blocked off the line, I think.
Yeah, they put a lot of pressure on. One of the Philly goals, as we mentioned, was sort of a goalkeeper calamity foul in the box, which, whether or not it should have been a penalty, he was out of position. And the other one sort of ping-ponged off the head of a defender. I think it hit Romney's head and then hit the Philly strikers' leg or head and went in. So wasn't like they were beaten by 3 great goals. It's probably 2 or probably 1 really good goal and then 2 bad ones. And so I think this Philly team is beatable. It's not an aggregate goal series, so all they have to do is win. Now the home game's on a Wednesday night at Gillette Stadium, which we can talk about later. But just to your question about the lineup, I think that the team is fine for one more year. Carlos Heel, I think, has one more year under contract. If they can keep Tomas Jonkelet, Gustavo Bow, and then build around some of the younger players who aren't leaving, like Henry Kessler is probably not going anywhere. They'll get Brandon Bey back from injury, hopefully next year. And, you know, we'll see what happens with DeJuan Jones and Noel Buck. Maybe they're headed overseas. But there's enough there to think that they could be good next year. But they're going to have some big questions, mainly who's going to be the coach, and how is that new coach going to blend with the existing team and style? But I think it's too early to look ahead, because I still think they could beat Philadelphia in about 9 days.
Well, I'd like to think that, and appreciate the note of optimism. Gustavo Bow did score a nicely taken goal, weaving through the defense on an individual effort to roof another shot, just a classic Gustavo Bow goal. So they're not completely giving up. And we should also note that Carlos Heel had to leave the Philadelphia game in the 20-something minute, or pretty early on, after he took a hard foul and wasn't able to continue.
That game was Saturday night, and it's now Monday night, and there's been no update on his injury status.
Right, and he was able to walk off the field, so clearly not a broken limb, but it could be a bad muscle bruise, which I would think in a week and a half, maybe he could be back on the field, hopefully.
Right, they're going to need him if they're going to have a chance. And that foul was what we've seen throughout his time in MLS. I mean, it was a bad foul, should have been a yellow card. The ref didn't take the card out of his pocket. And you could see the Philly players high-fiving the guy who committed the foul after the play, if you watch the replay on MLS, on MLS's website. So, you know.
Wow, I didn't notice that. That's extremely disappointing. And it's really a problem for the league, that the star players can just be fouled out of the game with no repercussion.
Right. Yeah. So, and I didn't see it in real time, but when you go back and watch the replay, I mean, he's late. He comes in going after his leg. And yeah, I would guess, like you said, is that, you know, it's probably a bruise of some kind, but it was just very frustrating. Once he was out of the game, they had no flow to their game, and that kind of took all the momentum away.
Yeah. That's a big adjustment for the refs to make, that in the course of the regular season would take them a few games to really figure out, but there isn't that time and space available now. But there is one factor to the Revs and an advantage for them. We were talking a little bit about the new playoff format,
right,
which in the world of soccer feels like going backwards, the sort of best of three that's independent of home goals and away goals and aggregate goals, and every game goes to a shootout immediately after 90 minutes.
Right. For those of you who don't know, the first round of the playoffs is a best of three series, with each game will have a winner and a loser. If it's tied at the end of 90, it goes to a shootout immediately. It feels very MLS 1.0, you know, like going
back.
It
feels MLS 1.0. But Eric, you said that the Revs still have a chance, and the reason they still have a chance is because losing 3-0 means nothing for game two and game three. It's a clean slate. They could win 1-0 the next two games and they go through.
Right. That's a great point, because we were going to record this podcast on Thursday night before the game, and we were sort of lamenting the new format. It feels very backwards. And now here we are 3 days later, and really the only reason that they still have just as good a chance now as they did last week was because of this new format, which limits the damage from a loss. And I think St. Louis lost 4-0, maybe 4-1. So there were some teams that got beaten up in the first round, but still have a chance to do something interesting.
So the Revs have a chance. Carlos Heel could be back. The team is going to be playing with a lot of pride on the line. Who wants to go out like this? after being a favorite in the league for most of the season, or at least half, two-thirds of the season.
Yeah.
There is something to play for.
There's something to play for, and I mean, that gets to the next problem with the format, which I think you brought up, which is that the game's on a Wednesday night in November. You know, this is a playoff game. This is a showcase for the league, for the franchise. And for whatever reason, they have a 10-day layoff between game one and game two. And then game two is not even on a weekend. It's on a weeknight, where historically, you know, the Revs haven't drawn very well. They had 41,000 there for the last game of the regular season. My guess, they'd be lucky to get 20,000 there for the playoff game.
Right. Yes, it certainly seems absurd to have that much time between games. And couldn't they fit in even a Friday night game if the New England Patriots had a game in, over the weekend, and there wasn't enough time to prepare the field? But I'll say again, is luck on the Revs' side with a little bit of extra time to allow Carlos Hill and maybe another player or two to heal?
Yeah, it could be that these new changes that we don't like will help the Revs. But I mean, I would say, aside from this specific series, the changes feel like they're taking the product and making it a little bit worse. I mean, and we see this in other sports too, right? Like, I know baseball dealt with long layoffs between the wild card round and the end of the first round, and some teams had, you know, a significant amount of time off between games. Basketball will, the NBA will, if the series ends, if the two semifinal series end in sweeps, they won't pull forward the start date of the NBA finals. That those dates are fixed, and so it creates this vacuum where nothing's happening. I think they would say it allows them to build an excitement and market it. But as a fan, and I would think for the players too, there's a loss of that day-to-day momentum of moving the season forward.
Yeah, I agree. The momentum issue and the continuity and just the whole format seems contrived. You go from a best of three initial series to one and done the rest of the way, which, okay, that's fine in terms of playoff excitement, like it was last few years, every game. I guess it's supposed to prevent, you know, a one miraculous game like NYC FC had against the Revolution a few years ago, when the Revs were the Supporter Shield winners and clear favorites to win the title.
Yeah.
But had a 3-week layoff and had trouble against New York. So this is, in some ways, it's a little bit more fair perhaps, but it is odd. And the league has never even had a best of three series before. It's always been, I think, initial rounds before were your classic home and away and aggregate goals. What the world's game is built around up into a championship game,
right?
Whether it be the Champions League or Europa League. It is contrived, in my opinion. It is odd.
Do you think that was strategic by the Revs to take Hill off there? Like, if he was going to be, maybe he could have kept going 75-80%, but they figured better to rest him, see what happens, and then have him 100% for the next two games? Or do you think it was a serious enough injury that he had to come off? There was no choice.
That's a good question.
Because I'm looking at the scores of the other playoff games. So the Revs lost 3-1. LA beat Vancouver 5-2. Cincinnati beat the Red Bulls 3-0. Kansas City beat St. Louis 4-1. And then there was one close game. Houston beat Salt Lake. But this new format, no aggregate goals, no away goals, I wonder if a team gets behind a little bit, they're going to press to tie it. And if they don't, then it doesn't matter if they give up one more goal or six more goals.
Right. I think Hill did leave after the first goal, if I remember. There was some other stoppage in play where he sat down on the field. So clearly he did try to continue, because that foul was in like the third or fourth minute. It was very early on.
Okay.
So he did try to play for some time and then had enough.
Yeah.
But he was able to walk off the field, climb up a few rows of the stands to get to his seat.
Yeah, that was funny too. Like, why didn't here's a guy who's hurt. Why doesn't everybody move over one and just let him sit down in the closest seat?
I was gonna ask if you noticed that. I was like, yeah, they're like, oh, I guess I'll. It was like at an airplane or something, and everyone sort of like, not everyone gets up to let the person into their seat. He'll have to like navigate with an injury to the far end of the row to sit down.
Yeah, I mean, there's the fans in the stands are more considerate of someone bringing a beer and a hot dog back to their seat than the best player on the team, maybe one of the best players in the league. Well, we'll try to get back to our seats for next Wednesday's game, and definitely think they can still do it. But it's going to be interesting to see which Revs team shows up, the first half of the season team or the team that has finished the season sliding down the escalator. Okay, well, sounds good. We'll be back to talk about it after next week's game, and hopefully the Revs can keep this season going.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warista and Noam Shore. We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warista and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warista. Rev's crowd clips appear courtesy of the New England Revolution.